Thanks for tuning in today for the show, and glad to have joining us now in the studio someone whose work you probably have read in the Napa Valley Register, but you may not know she has a novel out. We're talking about Sasha Paulson joining us now in studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Barry.
Thanks for coming in today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Your new book is called Dancing on the Spider's Web, and that relates to a quote you use right here in the front of the book from the great Jack Kerouac.
Yep.
Tell us about that connection.
Well, that was sort of accidental or serendipitous. I actually got the name from this painting that I bought in college of a little fairy dancing on a spider's web. And when I needed a name for the book, I thought about that because the character kind of reminded me of that fairy who was just sort of dancing away while the insects are playing. Then I ran across this quote from Jack Kerouac, and because City Lights, the bookstore in San Francisco, a couple of key scenes take place in it, it all sort of fit together. That's how I ended up with Jack Kerouac in there. And he kind of epitomizes crazy times in San Francisco.
Right. And there's a definite feel in the book of a sort of, not exactly, I started to say the breakneck pace of on the road, but it's more than that. It's more like serendipity and encountering people, and then your life is taken in a different direction. It's not like your characters are marching down a path and nothing's going to alter that. They're just sort of blowing in the wind.
I guess so, especially the main character, Sarah Glass, who just makes this abrupt change in her life when she gets in her car and drives across country from New York to San Francisco just for a month. But as we all know, you make a change like that, and you don't know where that month's going to take you.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, the question always comes up, is Sarah Glass an autobiographical character? Is this you?
No, not at all.
Is there overlap?
No, there's not even overlap. She's really a creature of my imagination, and that's the fun part. And I think it's also necessary for fiction. I think it'd be very boring to write about yourself. I mean, especially because I'm a journalist. We write about other people all the time, and we tell their stories. And so there was something very freeing about creating this character who has very little relation to me. I've taken a lot of other people's experiences and combined them for Sarah, but I view her as somebody who's very smart, very driven, and she's got a lot of kindness in her too, and I don't really identify with any of that.
you're mean to yourself. Are any of the characters, you know, when a book comes out in a relatively small town like Napa, and it's set in part in Napa, are people going to find themselves in here?
I don't know. You know, it's very interesting to see how people react to different characters. I got an email from someone yesterday saying, I'm trying to track down this character, Matt Biaggi, who's a very, very minor character. Now, is that the Biaggis of this? It's like, no, it's all really, you know, imaginative. Mm-hmm. Now, I do have another book in the works that is more, there might be people whom I've met over the past few years who turn up as characters sort of irresistibly, but not in this one, really. Not Napa.
Yeah.
There are places that Buttercream Bakery, for example, it seems to play a significant role.
Rightly so.
Absolutely.
I even saw a reference to KVON in there.
Seriously? I think so.
You did. You said, and the radio station was, KVON radio was playing and something, something, something.
Oh my God, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you are.
The book has a wonderful comic quality, witty comic quality that's both seems to be in the characters and in your telling of the story. You know, there's Sasha Paulson's wit and comic quality as well as in your characters. Have people reacted to it that way?
I think so. I mean, I remember when I got the manuscript back from the copy editor with this very amazed note saying, it's funny.
Yeah.
And she didn't expect that, I guess.
It's slyly funny. You know, you're reading a paragraph and it's descriptive and you're just following along and then suddenly, boom, there's a joke, you know, kind of over, you know, something clever or...
Oh, well, thank you.
Over and over again.
That's probably unintentional, but, you know... there's a wonderful quote from Jane Austen, which I always get scrambled, but she basically says, you know, for what do we live but to make sport for our neighbors and to laugh at them in return? I think it's one way to get through life, is perceiving the never-failing humor in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the human comedy.
The human comedy. We are it.
Let's talk a little bit about the process. Now, first of all, how long have you been a writer? Have you been a writer all your life?
Yes, yes. And you know who started it? Was Mrs. Wilson, first grade, Browns Valley School. She was the most wonderful teacher. And I think that first week of school, there was no kindergarten back in those days at Browns Valley. So we were brand new students, and she sat each one of us down and had us dictate a story to her. And then she typed them all up and had us illustrate them, and then she made a book. And I think, you know, you see your work in print, and then you're just hooked.
The light bulb went on.
The light bulb went on.
And you liked that.
Yeah.
And so as you went through school, were you pursuing... that kind of career? Were you an English major or?
Yeah, I was an English major. Mm-hmm. I discovered Shakespeare and Chaucer and all these wonderful storytellers, and I thought, you know, what endures are the stories that we tell, whether it's theater, novels, poems, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. stories and paintings. You know, the arts endure. Politicians come and go, but we hope they do.
Mostly go.
Mostly go.
Yeah. I have a new approach to it all the last few years after being kind of a serious-minded person most of my life, and some people may be surprised to hear, you know, to hear that if they think, you know, if they are socially friends with me, I like to laugh and have fun. But inside, you know, I'm very frowny and always trying to figure things out, you know, like trying to understand all the time. And I got to a point a few years ago where my decision was the only truth is in fiction. The only truth is in art, you know, because mm-hmm. everything else falls apart when you look at it very closely. You can't really get to the truth. It's all opinions and gray area. And even, you know, history is somebody's opinion. But you find truth in art because it resonates with you. You know, that is a true feeling or a true statement or, you know, a true belief.
That's a really interesting perspective, I guess so, because in a backwards sort of way, when you're testing something that you've created, I'm sure this happens to you with theater and your own writing too, it's like you're looking for this point where it resonates with you, where you think, ah, that's it, and you circle around it a lot and discard things, and then all of a sudden it's like, yes, this is true.
Right.
And that's interesting to think that it would be, you say, fiction rather than newspaper writing, because in journalism, I mean, we really are striving to tell the truth. Mm-hmm. We genuinely are, despite what anybody says. You know, we may make mistakes or get things wrong, but the goal is to tell the truth, however you can figure it out.
I think somehow I draw a line between truth and factualness.
Very good.
Like, truth is beyond factualness for me. Truth is like in your soul.
Yes.
You know
yes.
this is true. And it may be a small thing about relationships or people, but it resonates, you know, mm-hmm. whereas factualness is just factualness.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's true.
That's my opinion.
True.
So you wanted to be a writer from Browns Valley Elementary School, and you went on to Napa High, right?
Yeah, went to mm-hmm. Napa High, mm-hmm. graduated from Napa High. Left there and went to Berkeley. I didn't Berkeley at the time was so huge, still is, so intimidating, full of riots, full of National Guard. I'm really dating myself now, but it was a wild place. And for a kid from Napa, I was 17 when I went to Cal, and it was like going light years away from Napa as it was back in the 70s. Yeah. So I studied at Berkeley, but then I took some time and went over to St. Mary's because my boyfriend was there, and every time there were riots, he would have to come and get me, and he'd take me over to St. Mary's, and it was so beautiful and timeless there with the cows on the hills and stuff. So I went to St. Mary's and did some work there, and that's really where I found, you know, these Christian brothers were teaching about Shakespeare and Chaucer, and everything just felt timeless there. So I kind of restored my spirits and then went back to Berkeley and did journalism. But that was a really very cool time, I mm-hmm. think, where I found more art and maybe even truth at St. Mary's.
And so you took your degree from Berkeley, mm-hmm. right? And then you lived other places. You lived some other places and eventually came back to Napa. Is that right?
Yeah. I married an astronomer who was doing a postdoc at Berkeley when I was doing graduate work at the School of Journalism, and then we became sort of academic gypsies for a few years, which was really fun. He got postdocs in Paris and Munich, and so we lived there, and then we went to Boston, and then eventually I left and brought my two children back to Napa. Mm-hmm. But it was a great time. It was absolutely a wonderful time to be out and exploring the world, but I was glad to come back to Napa.
Yeah. We're talking with Sasha Paulson, who you may know from Napa Valley Register, but today we're talking about her new book, Dancing on the Spider's Web, which I know is available at Napa Book Mine because you did an event down there, and mm-hmm. we talked about it on their book talk show a couple of weeks back.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Got
that's
a mention.
Nice.
Yeah. And I heard the event was really well attended.
Yeah, it was so nice. And then Jessel Miller at the Jessel Gallery did an event on Friday night, and it was just so touching both times to see people, many of whom I hadn't seen in a few years, turning up and buying the book and talking about the book. So it was just it's a very warm, fuzzy way of launching a book into the world. Yeah. You know, now it has to go beyond Napa, which is going to be more scary, but yeah. It was a really nice way to start.
Mm-hmm. So I started out to talk about the process, and I think a lot of people who do write or want to write, or even just avid readers, are always interested in the writer's process. And things like, you know, when did you formulate the idea for the book? How long did you plan for it? Do you outline? Do you have post-it notes all over the wall? You know, how did you go about it?
Well, I have discovered that just about everybody has a completely different method, and mine is somewhat chaotic. But I started drafting these books when I was in my 20s, when you're arrogant and you think you have all the answers, and of course you could just sit down and write a novel that has all the truths in the world in your novel. And then, you know, I got married, had two children, really got knocked out of the ivory tower, ended up, you know, a single mom with two kids, raising them here in Napa and working at the Napa Register. And then it was a while before I got the books back out and started looking at them thinking, oh my God, these are really terrible. But I'm really glad I did it. It's like making a lot of notes from a certain time and looking back and thinking, I don't see the world like that now. But so I'm really glad I captured something of it. So then it became a process of turning it into an actual book. And for me, writing is very character driven. Once you have the characters, they tell the story, and you're kind of going along just narrating their story and trying to keep them in line. I remember one time talking to this author. He was one of my professors, and I was working on this book, and I said, you know, they will do things that surprise you. And he said, yes, and that's good and bad, because on one hand, it means they're coming alive. On the other hand, be careful they don't take over your story. Mm-hmm. And I thought, how crazy is this? We're talking about figments of your imagination, which is what they are. Mm-hmm. And yet we're talking about them as if they can take over something. Mm-hmm. So my process really is to get up in the morning and make coffee and write before, you know, the world is awake, and then go about the rest of the day, which is to go down to the newsroom and encounter the real world.
Do you have a page count that you're shooting for, or an amount of time that you write every day?
No, not really.
Just whatever strikes you.
Yeah, but I think it's good to do it every day. Mm-hmm. Somehow that, for me, that keeps up a rhythm. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I do.
Yeah. I know for me, when I stopped doing talk radio, which was about 2003, a couple of years went by, and I didn't have any outlet for all of the brilliant things I needed to say about the world. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started writing a blog. And I wrote a blog pretty religiously, like daily, for quite a while. It was great discipline. But I can't apply that at all to anything else. That was the only thing I've ever been able to like do every day. Uh-huh. Because it was sort of like a journal entry. It was mm-hmm. a limited amount of, you know, it wasn't going to be open-ended.
Yeah.
Know? Somehow open-ended things are much more random to me. They just happen when I feel like it. But it's funny. And I suppose painters are the same way. They all have a different way of approaching. Mm-hmm. They're going to paint or sculpt or, you know.
Yeah.
There is no right or wrong way. I guess that's the encouragement for people who have an idea. Mm-hmm. There is no right or wrong way.
No, I don't think there is. I don't think there's a set method. I think part of the whole process is discovering your way to create mm-hmm. it something.
And all that really matters is the outcome.
Yeah.
When you get to it. Yeah, it's all that people remember. Mm-hmm. Again, we're talking with Sasha Paulson. The book is called Dancing on the Spider's Web. It's a really engaging and intriguing book. I didn't get a chance to read all of it. I skipped through and read pages and flipped back and forth and just kept, again, being entertained.
Oh, good.
Time again, interested in the characters. What's going to happen? And who are these people? And why are they acting this way? And uh-huh. all the right questions in your head, you know?
Well, thank you. Thank you for reading it. I mean, for me, the big question is, are people still reading fiction? And I certainly hope so.
I think the answer is yes.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. Good.
We're going to take a break. We'll come back with more. We'll talk some more with Sasha after this break that's just ahead. And in this segment, we are talking with Sasha Paulson. You may know her from the Napa Valley Register, where she is the features editor, and byline appears often on all kinds of interesting stories about life in the wine country and food and culture and theater reviews and all kinds of things that you do. In this case, we're talking about Sasha's new novel, which is called Dancing on the Spider's Web. And my recent dry throat tickle has returned, so pardon me while I have a sip of water. Let me ask a brilliant question. You can talk while I'm drinking. We discussed the biographical or lack of biographical nature of your book. Do people, has anyone read this and come back and said, I know this is me. I know you're talking about me. Because that would be a fear in my mind, because you can't help but draw from the people that you know.
No, nobody has said that. In fact, I've had the opposite experience. There is one character in it. His name is Sterling, and he's perfectly awful. He's and I did base him on the husband of a good friend of mine from college. She's one of the nicest people you'll ever meet, and she was married to this really creepy guy, and I could never figure out why. But you know, it's none of my business. But he sort of surfaced in this novel as an example of like just a person you would never want to be married to. Anyway, so and I gave her an early draft to read because she was very curious, and she and I thought, oh dear, she's going to recognize her husband in this and probably be offended. But instead, she read it, she came back, she goes, oh, you know, this was just so much fun, and I really enjoyed reading it. But where on earth did you get that awful character, Sterling? Did not recognize him at all. So it was lucky for me, but that was very interesting. So I think people read all sorts of, you know, what they take away is just really fascinating. Mm-hmm. I love hearing it.
And it sometimes highlights that we all have our own view, and two of us are looking at a third person. We're both thinking different things and mm-hmm. having different perceptions and reactions to them. Yeah. Just natural, I guess. Coming back to the whole process part, you and I have talked off the air a little bit about getting the book from a manuscript that you're happy with to a published book. Everything, you know, it used to be in the old days, just a few years back, you sent that manuscript off, you had an agent or you didn't, and that was kind of all you could do. Now people self-publish and they, you know, put things online, and there's just a whole completely changed world. How did you approach that, and what information or advice would you have for people who are working on something like you've been maybe for a long time, and they want to see it get published?
That's a really good question, and I wish there were a clear answer. When I started with this, it seemed like the path was very clear. I had written to a publisher, and he was interested in the book, and that opened the door for an agent from New York who said, I'll take over from here. And so I really thought, this is it. I have a New York agent and a potential publisher. And that was probably the high point of the whole process, because she took the manuscript. She was a wonderful, very supportive person. Got it rejected all over the place in New York. Just I saved all the rejections because I figured this is what you go through. But that seemed like the very traditional path to take. You know, you get an agent, she gets rejections, and then one day you get a message saying, we have an offer. And in this case, it was a very small new publishing house, but they were really enthusiastic. And I signed a contract with them. And that was 5 years ago. And then became the real educational process. These people kept it for 2 years and then dropped it. And then I was working with another publisher who it took a year before we realized he wasn't going to publish it. And then three other publishers were interested, which just says to me that it is just a complete jungle out there. You know, you just don't know. And I really was going to just, like, say, forget it. I have these novels. I want to write them. I'm going to die soon. So I just want to turn them, you know, I just want to finish the manuscripts. And it's interesting because I had been working with another novelist. He asked me if I'd edit his novel. And as I worked on it, I was thinking, this is a really good book. This is about 3-4 years ago. It was science fiction, which I don't usually read. But it was well written, good characters, good plot. And I asked him, why are you self-publishing? Because that's what he was doing. He had a whole series of books and he was self-publishing them. And I said, don't you want, you know, the agent and the publisher and everything? And he said, I don't have enough time. He was in his late 70s, and he had these books he wanted to write and get out into the world, and he said, I don't have 2 years to look for an agent, which is about what it takes, and then another 5 years as well, it's being shopped around. And it kind of came back to my mind when I was thinking about what to do with it, because I was so disillusioned with the publishing world, and it's not that these people are bad by any means. It's that I think they're all looking for a way to survive in our modern world. Mm-hmm. And so it was my daughter who got the idea of she was going to just do a publishing house. I think she was tired of listening to me complain and moan and groan and say, this is it, you know. And plus, I had this plan I was going to I said, I'm going to just write my books, and then I'm going to leave them to you and Sam, who's my son. And then I will be very happy to die knowing that you're going to do something. And she's like, well, Mom, you know, I don't know. That's, you know. Anyway, so she began researching, and the result is we created this little publishing entity called Tempest Books.
I see.
And learned the whole process of what it takes, all the steps from a manuscript to a finished book. And there are lots of different ways, which I've discovered. There are a lot of hybrid publishers out there where you front the costs and they'll put your book out for you. You have to be really careful. Some of them are just vanity press still. And some of them are pretty good. It's just that there are so many elements. You write the book all by yourself, but then you really need a team of people. And that's the big, you know, you really do need an editor, and you need a copy editor, and you need a designer, and you need a proofreader. I still get a lot of books down at the register. People will write a book, they'll put it on Amazon, because you can do that. You can just upload it and you have your book. And they want a review, and I look at it and go, oh my God, you don't want a review, because an honest review will say you needed an editor.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, there's just all different routes to publishing now. I think the traditional one is still a very valid one, but you have to have a lot of time and patience. And at the other end, if you have no patience, you can self-publish, but you may end up with a book that's you're going to give to your family and friends. Mm-hmm. So it depends on what you really want.
You have a couple of boxes in the garage,
yeah,
you know, for 20 years.
Yeah, or right. I know writers who have the box in the back seat of their car, mm-hmm. and they drive around with that. So mm-hmm. we kind of found a middle ground with a distributor and some really good professional people who knew the different aspects of it, mm-hmm. Especially the artist I worked with. She is just fabulous. Dorothy Carrico Smith. She was recommended to me. She's the one who did the cover, and then she did the interior design. Mm-hmm. The first publishers who had my book, they sent me their cover that was designed in-house, and it was so awful. It was ugly. It had nothing to do with the book, and I thought, you know, am I obligated to use their cover? Mm-hmm. And my agent said, well, you can offer to pay for your own cover design. And they accepted that, and Dorothy was recommended. And I loved her cover so much. I kind of hated to give up on the book because I thought, I just want to get her cover out into the world. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
So the designs the publishers were coming up with were marketing designs, something they thought would sell the book.
Oh, God, I don't think so.
Really?
It was, you know what it looked like? It looked like pink bubble gum had been melted all over this canvas and dripped down in this big lumpy mess. Yeah, I could see your face. That's kind of what I thought, too, when I looked at it, and I thought, what? You know, my agent said, yes, lost opportunity. She said, you know, they're a new publishing house, and they don't have a lot of money, but it didn't look to me like anything that would sell mm-hmm. at all. I mean, mm-hmm. if anything, it just looked like kind of a catastrophe.
So you mentioned earlier that, you know, so far here at Napa Book Mine, or if you were at the library and had a reading or something, you got a Napa hometown welcome.
And people
know you, they're interested because you're local, and they've read what you've written in the paper and so on, and so they want to read your book, and it's very friendly. And then you said, then the next level, you don't know what that will be like. What does that mean? How do you go about going to that next level beyond the local author in the local bookshop?
Oh, I know, because that was just so easy. Jessel had been waiting for 5 years ever since I first told her I had sold the book. She said, we're going to do a party here. And she kept her confidence up that one day we would. And so that was so easy. And BookMind, too, super supportive of local writers. I think they're terrific. And Copperfields now is doing the first event outside of Napa, which is Yountville. But still, that's outside of Napa. So they've set that up. And that was really the Yountville Arts Commission asked me if I'd like to do an event in Yountville, which I thought was quite an honor. That's on the 20th of July. And then most of the publicists I know are food and wine people. So, and then they're great people I've worked with over the years. So they're coming up with ideas. I don't have one particular publicist, but just because we've worked together for so long and they've sent me their press releases for so many years, I think, you know, they're sort of pitching in to do what they can. So one person is working on readers' books in Sonoma, and then Book Passage, and ultimately, this woman from San Francisco said, "You gotta go to City Lights." But again, this is not the smooth rollout that a professional publisher focused on this would do. This is kind of like we're still learning as we go. And I figure for the second book, we'll know what we're doing.
Which leads me to the question, what is the second book? You earlier mentioned that in your 20s, you formulated all these books, I think you said. So how many are there? And are they interrelated? Are they separate stories?
There are about six of them, and they are interrelated. I just have this cast of characters that have... they've lived in my head for all these years, and they haven't gotten that much older. Although I have. It was one of the things that my agent really liked when I tried to explain it to her. I said, it's not like I'm writing them chronologically, but different characters appear in these different stories, and they're all interrelated, but different ones come into focus in different stories. And she described it better than I could, which was saying, well, it's like you've got a camera sort of panning over the landscape and you focus in on different elements. And I said, yes, that's it. But basically, they go from 1950 to the present time, and which is a more recent creation. Because I think the overall goal, even though sometimes I just make fun of things, it's really to understand how we've reached this point in time. We're at such a critical point in time. This is when it gets serious. You think, here we are on the brink of extincting ourselves. How did we get here? And who are we really as people? And the characters are Americans for the most part, but they come from so many different backgrounds, all mixed up, and their lives interact. Mm-hmm. So that's the big picture.
Yeah. This is kind of maybe a hard question, I'm not sure, but who is this book aimed at? You know, who's the reader for this book?
I think it's probably, well, first of all, people who still read books and people who read fiction and like fiction. It's a really important question, though, because you're supposed to be able to define your potential readers very carefully. I have found that it's... I'm getting the most response from people who sort of lived through the 70s, because this is set in the 70s, and they're saying, I remember this, and I remember that, or what I can remember of the 70s. Mm-hmm. This just resonates. So, I mean, I hope to go beyond it. I was very excited when younger people who read it told me they liked it.
I was thinking, actually, that, yes, if you lived through that period, you'd be interested based on that experience you'd had. But the characters are not old folks like you and I, they're young people, and they're living a very spontaneous life, which is, feels very modern to me, very, you know, 2019, yeah. In the way I view young people today. And so I would think as a young person, you might say, oh, I identify with these characters, what they're going through.
Yeah, there's the ambivalence about relationships, about people's identities. You know, my daughter and her friends have said that that resonates because if anything, there's even more ambiguity now, and it sort of leaves open the question of what's the future of relationships. And when you see now, like with a lot of young people opting out of marriage, opting out of committed relationships, it kind of it seems to me that some of the seeds of that are there. Mm-hmm. This man emailed me yesterday saying, "My favorite line in your book is towards the end, when one of the characters says, 'Is choice the enemy of commitment?'" And he said, "I think that just summed up the whole book." And I said, "That's very interesting. I love when people email me with thoughts." Mm-hmm. That's just really fun to hear.
Isn't
that.
It? And, yeah. And that people take things from what you've done that you maybe weren't focused on or not necessarily even intending, but they got something based on their life experience. And that's, again, coming back to that, the truth being in fiction, that person found the truth, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating, but I have to say it's worth it then to go through all the you know ups and downs of writing and publishing when you reach that moment where someone tells you that it somehow affected them or resonated with them, then that's all worth it.
It's a novel by our guest, Sasha Paulson, Dancing on the Spider's Web. And as we mentioned, we know it's at Napa BookMine. Did you say it's also Copperfields?
Copperfields.
Mm-hmm. So there are two places to go and look for it. I encourage you to read it. It's, like I said, entertaining and engaging. And the references to local stuff is obviously very much part of the engagement, I guess. Your description of St. Helena. Was chapter 28. You know, I had a lot of enjoyment just as I paged through and read different sections. So thanks for getting it done finally.
Oh, well, thank you, Barry. Thank you for...
And congratulations.
Thanks.
And we're all out of time for this go-around. Thanks to our listening audience for tuning in today here to Wine Country Live.